This is here. People have been warning about the North Korean ICBM for 20 years.
The North Korea missile threat grows. It's Monday, July 31st. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us online at VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, moving forward in Afghanistan. Australia stops a terror plot, increasing Chinese authority in Hong Kong, early Alzheimer's detection, and hydrogen-fueled buses. Hop on now and take the ride with VOA Asia. The U.S. Air Force flew two B-1B bombers over the Korean Peninsula Saturday, accompanied by South Korean and Japanese jet fighters. The U.S. Pacific Command said the mission was in direct response to North Korea's escalatory launch of an intercontinental ballistic missiles July 3rd and July 28th. General Terence O'Shaughnessy, U.S. Pacific Air Force's commander, said North Korea remains the most urgent threat to regional stability. Diplomacy remains the lead, however, and he said we have a responsibility to our allies and our nation to showcase our unwavering commitment while planning for the worst-case scenario. If called upon, we are ready to respond with rapid, lethal, and overwhelming force at a time and place of our choosing. The 10-hour Joint Forces mission began at Anderson Air Force Base in Guam. U.S. Air Force bomber jets were joined by two Japanese F-2 fighter jets in Japanese airspace. U.S. bombers then flew over the Korean Peninsula and were accompanied by four South Korean fighter jets. The U.S. bombers also did a low pass over South Korea's Osan Air Base before returning to Guam. On the Sunday morning news program ABC This Week, Joe Cerencioni, president of the Plowshares Fund, a global public grant-making foundation focused on nuclear weapons policy and conflict resolution, and also author of Nuclear Nightmare, Securing the World Before It's Too Late, says while Pyongyang still has technical hurdles to overcome, the North Korea missile threat is now real.
They have to perfect the miniaturization of the warhead. They got to see if their reentry vehicle works. We don't know what the payload of this test was. So depending on the weight, it could go further. It could go less. But this is here. This is here. People have been warning about the North Korean ICBM for 20 years. They've been barking wolf about this. Well, the wolf is at the door. This is a very real threat to the United States.
President Donald Trump again criticized China for failing to stop North Korea's ballistic missile and nuclear weapons programs. Following Friday's launch of an intercontinental ballistic missile that landed west of Japan, Trump singled out China for blame on Saturday evening, saying the country could easily solve this problem. Joe Cerencioni says pressuring China has been Trump's primary strategic move so far because other options are not very attractive.
Well, he's trying to outsource the problem to China. This is what he hoped the fix would be. And why? Because there aren't really many other good options. Sanctions don't work. They've been increasing their tests since we've been piling on sanctions. Military, yes, we could rain death and destruction on Pyongyang. But guess what? They could do the same for Seoul. So any military action we take would probably trigger a war unlike anything we've seen since World War II. That leaves only really two options. Get China to do it. They are willing to put more pressure on, but only if it leads to talks, and that is really your ultimate solution. You've got to talk to them.
Trump's remarks echoed those made by Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, who released a statement that blamed both China and Russia for North Korea's continued violations of UN Security Council resolutions. Tillerson said as the principal economic enablers of North Korea's nuclear weapon and ballistic missile development program, China and Russia bear unique and special responsibility for the growing threat to regional and global stability. Former New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson, who has previously negotiated with North Korea, tells VOA developing a diplomatic approach remains the best strategy.
I believe what's going to happen is more sanctions by the United Nations, banking sanctions that have bite with Chinese banks on North Korea. I think they will have an effect. I think China will continue to pressure North Korea, not as much as it should on coal and oil exports. I think there will be a succession of other initiatives like cyber efforts to try to deter North Korea's missile and nuclear technology. But I think talking about preemptive military strikes where We've got 80,000 troops in Japan. We've got 25,000 troops in South Korea. We've got 25 million South Koreans around Seoul and the DMZ that would be vulnerable. I think you need a diplomatic new strategy that does involve Japan, that does involve South Korea, that does involve China and the U.S. But that is being developed now, my hope is. But I think talking about preemptive military strikes in a tinderbox area in the Korean Peninsula is not the best policy.
In April, Trump praised his first meeting with China's President Xi Jinping, later telling reporters that Xi had agreed to suspend coal and fuel shipments to pressure North Korea to stop its belligerent behavior. However, since then, the North has continued to threaten its neighbors and the United States, and Trump has grown more critical of Beijing. North Korea's missile launch was its second this month. Even though the missile landed west of Japan, experts said it would be powerful enough to reach much of the U.S. mainland. North Korea's official news agency said leader Kim Jong-un boasted that the latest test was meant to send a grave warning to the U.S. Plowshares Fund President Joe Cerencioni says there's good reason to, for now, put aside concern of an imminent North Korean strike.
They are not going to just do a bolt out of the blue to destroy us. Why do they threaten us? Because we are threatening them. This is classic deterrence. They want to have the capability to hit us in order to guarantee their security. So let's see if we can find a non-nuclear way to guarantee their security, convince them that they're better off talking than they are threatening.
China condemned the launch, while Japan, South Korea, and the United States vowed to work together on a new Security Council measure aimed at curbing North Korea's nuclear ambitions. Word of Friday's missile launch came as a bill approved by Congress calling for tougher sanctions on North Korea, as well as Iran and Russia, landed on Trump's desk. We invite you to read more on our top story by following us on Facebook at VOA Asia and on our voanews.com website. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. Typhoon injures 81 in Taiwan as second storm bears down. Philippine mayor on Duterte drug list killed in police raid. U.S. confirms killing of additional Islamic State leaders in July 11th airstrike. Pakistan set to elect new prime minister on Tuesday. In North Korea, generation gap grows behind propaganda. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. While President Donald Trump's administration is seeking a reason to keep American troops in Afghanistan after 16 years of war, U.S. officials are also examining options to stabilize conflicts in the region, including a dialogue that would move forward a peace process. VOA State Department correspondent Nike Ching reports the story, narrated by Cindy Sain.
Suicide attackers continue the relentless violence in Afghanistan as the United States continues its policy review in the country's longest war. As the top U.S. diplomat, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is not advocating for military options, but instead to facilitate a dialogue between Kabul and the Taliban.
Ultimately, like in many situations, in many other countries, military options or military strategy is not necessarily going to win those countries and put peace back together. It's part of it, but in the long run, you have to bring both sides of the table or multiple sides to the table together to determine their future.
When President Trump was asked if he would deploy additional American soldiers to Afghanistan, the president responded, "We'll see." Some analysts warn of the danger of prioritizing security over diplomacy, saying the Trump administration could suffer politically for an open-ended troop commitment in Afghanistan. They argue Washington should find a comprehensive strategy which addresses many challenges Kabul is facing.
I think that we really need to be thinking about the diplomatic strategy and specifically how to engage with the Afghan government, which is in a lot of trouble. There's a major crisis.
In a recent interview with VOA, former Afghan President Hamid Karzai strongly opposed a policy that sends a message to intensify the war. He said he supports a U.S. strategy that pursues peace, promotes unity, and fosters good relations with Afghan's neighbors. Responding to a report that Afghanistan's vast array of mineral deposits may encourage President Trump to remain militarily engaged in the country, State Department spokeswoman Heather Nauert declined to get ahead of any final decisions made by the president. For VOA State Department correspondent Nike Ching, I am Cindy Sain, VOA News, Washington.
Happening now in Asia, Taiwan's first typhoon of the year left 81 people injured and coastal towns flooded as the island braced for a second tropical storm. Typhoon Nesat made landfall on the northeast coast of Taiwan late Saturday. Howling winds toppled motor scooters and hit people with flying glass. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're spending part of your day with us on VOA Asia. Thank you for listening. Australia's Prime Minister says police have foiled a terrorist conspiracy to bring down an aircraft. Malcolm Turnbull said security at airports has been boosted. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports four men have been arrested.
Investigators in Australia say they've information the plan to blow up an aircraft involved the use of an improvised device. Four men have been detained following raids across Sydney Saturday by heavily armed police and members of Australia's domestic spy agency. A woman who said her son and husband were among those arrested has denied they had any ties to extremism. Senior police commanders say the raids were allegedly linked to an Islamic-inspired plot, although no specific details of time, date or location have been revealed. It's been reported the raids weren't planned, but were a rapid response to a tip-off received by the police. Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull says the authorities have foiled what appears to be an elaborate conspiracy.
We have the finest security, police, intelligence services in the world. The major counter-terrorism operation which has occurred is an example of the way in which terrorist plots are uncovered and disrupted. Due to the extraordinary intelligence services we have and the fine cooperation they have with our police and security agencies.
Additional security measures have been put in place at Sydney Airport and have now been extended to other parts of the country. Turnbull has urged air travellers to stay calm and said they should go about their business with confidence. Australia's national terror threat level remains at probable. Security agencies believe that individuals or groups have the intent and capability to carry out an attack. Since 2014, 70 people have been charged as a result of more than 30 counter-terrorism raids across the country. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
The news never stops. So keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This news alert from VOA Asia, Chinese President Xi Jinping says his military has the confidence and capability to bolster the country's rise into a world power. Xi oversaw a large-scale military parade Sunday meant to show off China's fighting prowess. Xi praised troops from an open-top Jeep as he drove by. Visit VOA Asia Facebook for the latest stories and features. This is VOA Asia. We continue now with VOA Asia. The joint checkpoint plan introduced by the city government of Hong Kong earlier this week that would allow mainland Chinese police at the terminus of a new high-speed rail line that connects the port city to other metropolises in China is expected to meet strong opposition when it goes against a tough legislative review. Many of the city's pan-Democrats and legal experts said the administration of a newly inaugurated chief executive, Carrie Lam, may have set off a political time bomb. They accuse Lam's administration of taking advantage of a loophole in the city's mini-constitution to draft the controversial co-location agreement, which, if implemented, could set a harmful precedent and put Hong Kong residents' rights and freedom at risk, even through business travelers using the rail may prefer convenience over autonomy. Pan-Democrat lawmaker Claudia Mo, formerly with the Civic Party, put the blame on Lam, who she said has failed in her first test to strike a balance between the interests of Beijing and Hong Kong citizens.
She simply hasn't got the guts to stand up against Beijing. She's a career bureaucrat. She will do what she's been told, and that's rather saddening.
Lam's administration this week announced a joint immigration checkpoint that would be set up at West Kowloon Terminus of the cross-border rail link to Guangzhou, with mainland officers enjoying full jurisdiction in the quarter of the complex leased to the mainland, as well as inside the train, even as it travels the city's 26-kilometer-long section. In other words, mainland laws, which lag far behind Hong Kong when it comes to the protection of human rights and freedom of expression, will be fully enforced at the designated mainland checkpoint and inside the trains of the $11 billion project, which is scheduled to begin operation in the third quarter of next year. City officials insisted that the co-location agreements would not breach the basic law, as the leased zone would be seen as outside of the city's boundary, and the leasing could be carried out through the law's Article 20, which stipulates Beijing can grant Hong Kong powers it doesn't have, including those to approve the leasing. Lam pledged that the proposal will neither compromise the city's rule of law or its high degree of autonomy, nor erode its one country, two systems policy. But legal experts disagreed. Kevin Yam of Progressive Lawyers Group said the city government would potentially create an active state over which Hong Kong courts are unable to scrutinize.
What they're doing is not to uphold the constitutionality of their idea or their proposal, but merely to try and shield it from constitutional scrutiny.
Yam adds the enforcement of mainland laws, even in a small part of Hong Kong, is in direct contravention of explicit requirements under the basic law. James To, a lawyer and lawmaker with the Democratic Party, also argued the city government has abused the fundamental design of Article 20, as its intention was to grant the city a higher degree of autonomy.
The current exercise is to authorize Hong Kong government or Hong Kong legislature to surrender our autonomy back to Beijing. I think it's a total disregard of the original spirit of Article 20.
Jeremy Tam, a pilot-turned-lawmaker, argued the city government has misled the general public by touting similar checkpoint arrangements which can be found overseas, including those between France and Britain with the Eurostar rail service.
When they're giving an example between U.S., Canada, and also the U.K. and France, they use the wrong example because they only have agreement on the immigration part of it. And all this jurisdiction, particularly the criminal, or the power of arrest, etc., still belong to the related country.
Opponents fear China's plan to further the mainland's integration with Hong Kong through the joint checkpoint arrangements may backfire and evoke legal arguments similar to those found in the Occupy movement of 2014. Already, younger residents have seen the project as another effort for China to exert control over Hong Kong. Our thanks to Joyce Huang for contributing to this report. At this hour in Asia, a new report says the crocodile industry in Australia's Northern Territory is worth more than four times the previous estimate of the $80 million price tag. Officials hope the findings will give poorer Aboriginal communities the chance to develop crocodile farming industries. Top stories and great features develop every day. They're found on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, an estimated 47 million people around the world are afflicted with dementia, a decline in memory or other thinking skills severe enough to interfere with daily life. The most common form of the condition is Alzheimer's disease, and now research shows that the way you speak may indicate whether you're at risk of developing dementia. VOA's Deborah Block reports a new study says pauses and filler words may be a sign of early mild cognitive impairment, and that could help doctors diagnose Alzheimer's much quicker.
The mother is...
72-year-old Alan Sweet is taking part in the dementia research at the University of Wisconsin. He is describing an illustration.
The stool is tilting and ready to tip over.
His words could help researchers understand more about the onset of dementia.
I can't say I enjoy it, because I'd be lying, but I recognize that that is, you know, these are scientific tests.
In sessions 2 years apart, researchers asked elderly people like Sweet to describe the same picture. They discover that more pauses, filler words, and other verbal changes could be a sign of early cognitive impairment. It doesn't mean these people will develop Alzheimer's, but many do, 15% to 20% each year.
This is definitely important because it's the first step in seeing that we can see change in speech very early on.
Current drugs can't slow or reverse dementia, but some drugs and treatments may help improve symptoms, especially at the early stages. So, this simple and inexpensive test for mental decline could make a difference.
We all use different techniques to speak, like fillers. We all use that occasionally. But in this case, what we're seeing is something more severe than what's typical.
That includes Ronald Reagan, who was president of the United States from 1981 to 1989. At news conferences later in his presidency, he used more nonspecific nouns and fillers.
If we're talking about disarming the Mujahideen.
In 1994, he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. Alan Sweet watched his father and then mother suffer from forms of dementia before they died.
My goal is simply to cure Alzheimer's, but to do what I can, where I can, when I can, to further the cause of Alzheimer's research.
Sweet and other participants in the study do not get individual results, but they do get the satisfaction of knowing they may help advance the fight against Alzheimer's. Deborah Block, VOA News, Washington.
R-T-H-U-P-I-V.
In some parts of the world, the race is on to find the next generation of clean fuel. VOA's Kevin Enix tells us in the Netherlands, a group of students called Team Fast has developed a unique secret catalyst that can produce hydrogen fuel that is cheaper and cleaner than gasoline.
It's a bit clunky looking, but the trailer on this bus is a new hydrogen fuel system. It's basically a giant chemistry set that is converting formic acid, an irritating chemical in ant and bee stings, into hydrogen fuel.
We combine a hydrogen molecule with a carbon dioxide molecule, and when they are combined, formic acid is formed, and that's a liquid. So you can store hydrogen in a liquid, and that's easy to fuel then.
Instead of gasoline, the tank is filled with what the team calls hydrazine. And a special secret catalyst they developed does the rest.
In the reformer, there's a catalyst, which is a chemical. And actually, the catalyst helps dissolve the hydrazine into hydrogen gas and CO2. So actually, it decomposes the molecule. And the hydrogen gas can be pumped into a fuel cell, which is comparable with a hydrogen car.
It works quite well. The only problem seems to be the range. But Team Fast is working on that.
So the bus that you can see in the background is only 80 kilometers of range. So you need an alternative in order to make it drive further. And a liquid fuel that can easily be refueled, like formic acid, is then the way to go to extend your range.
If they can fix that problem, Team Fast says they'll have a clean fuel technology that costs about the same as gasoline. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. We'd like to remind you that our program is available in many ways. You can get us from iTunes and SoundCloud, join us on VOA Asia Facebook, or just download the program from voanews.com. We'd also like to thank our listeners in Myanmar who have joined us via Facebook on VOA Burmese. Thanks for stopping by today. Come back again. We'd like to hear from you. You can write to us through Facebook on VOA Asia or send us an email at voaasia@voanews.com. Our directors, Tracy Carter, engineer Ida Nutku, managing editor Diane Gao, Ali Ogden and David Bird are on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead.